Hey guys, welcome back to Burger Bants. We're up to episode 4, and today I'm chatting to Henry Paul, an ambitious young chef born and bred in Cambridge. Enjoy. Hello, Henry.
Hiya.
Thanks so much for coming on. So I'm going to ask you what I ask everyone when they come on, which is about a little bit of a trip down memory lane. What sort of foods did you grow up on? Tell us a bit about your childhood and, yeah, a little bit of nostalgia.
So the main food that I grew up from is Indian food.
Yeah.
My mum is a fantastic Indian cook. From early age, was always having Indian food cooked by her. It's always lovely. And my dad also used to own a restaurant called the Maharaja, which was on Castle Hill.
Okay.
And back then, you know, good about 15 years ago now, 15, 20 years ago now, it was the best Indian restaurant in Cambridge.
So, wow.
So
food very much been ingrained in, you've been brought up.
Brought up by
in
food,
the industry.
Hospitality. Yeah, you know, we used to go there late at night, the age of 5 or 6, after we'd finished and have food, you know, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning.
Amazing.
Nice curries, he'd bring it back for us all the time. And then if he wasn't cooking it, my mum would be, you know, so. She'd cook for us all the time when we were younger. Massive feast, 4 or 5 different curries, sides, rice. It was amazing. Really, really nice. I was quite lucky in that way, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Have you got many siblings?
Yeah, so I've got 2 sisters and a brother.
Wow.
So, yeah, a few of us. My little brother and sister are a lot younger, about 7, 8 years younger than me. But, yeah, a lot of people to cook for, and we always used to, yeah, we all eat together, and it's just that sort of culture of eating together and sharing food has been ingrained for me from a really, really, really young age. I've been to India 4 or 5 times when I was a lot younger. And when we used to go over there, you know, we'd all sit down, eat together, all the food would come out, everyone sharing 4 or 5 different things. It was beautiful, yeah.
So what dishes do you remember? What were the real ones? Like when you were a kid, if your mum made it or your dad made it, it was like a big deal. Was it a special occasion?
Yeah, so when I was younger, from the restaurant, I'd always have king prawn curry. That was always my absolute favourite. Mm. You know, you can't go wrong for me with a nice king prawn curry. And my mum's chicken curry always went down really well. But she's quite innovative with her curry. She's always trying new things, trying different stuff to cook, which, yeah, it's amazing. Obviously, it's nice to be a taste tester for that as well.
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
But yeah, like I say, I mean, yeah, chicken curry, chicken potato curry for me will always go down well, yeah.
And were you brought into the kitchen? So was your dad like, right, come on, you're 14 now, you're in the kitchen helping me out, or did your mum involve you kids as well?
Not at all, to be honest with you.
Really?
I think because all the food kind of, it was just there and accessible for me. I never really felt the need to cook, really, to be honest with you. When I was a lot younger, kind of 8, 9 years old, we'd go into the restaurant to help dry the place and stuff. Then when I was 15, I started to work behind the bar.
Okay.
And that was amazing back then because it was just such a busy restaurant, you know, queues at the bar, the restaurant was always full, there was an upstairs and downstairs. So that was kind of my first experience of being in a hospitality environment properly. But my cooking habits in general from a young age weren't that great. Like if I was cooking for myself, it was kind of just the quickest thing, microwave meals, chucking a chicken breast in the oven. So it wasn't actually until I became a chef. I kind of learned how to cook.
That's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Kind of grown, I guess, yeah, I would have imagined that you'd have been really involved and like,
yeah, no, there's no like beautiful
learning,
story, yeah.
Learning all this stuff.
Yeah, no, it's pot noodles and pot noodles and the Nando's for me most of the time, to be honest with you. I mean, I loved enjoying nice food and going out to eat and stuff. I think I just love being around that atmosphere.
Yeah.
And I still do, but in terms of what I used to cook for myself, you know, I think if I was to cook that now, I'd be very ashamed of myself.
So at what point did you think, do you know what, I think I want to be a chef?
So I kind of fell into it. Kind of, it was almost like the world kind of guided me into chefing, right? So I, you know, done my A-levels and stuff like that, but from maybe doing my GCSEs, I realised that school wasn't really for me. It wasn't how I wanted to learn, really. I found it quite hard learning in that sort of dynamic.
Yeah.
So I tried my A-levels, I kind of flopped them the first time, so I thought, fuck it, let's do it again. Gave it another go, and soon just kind of found myself veering off different ways and not really interested in it at all. But at that sort of time, especially kind of 10, 15 years ago, you kind of, it's set, that's how you kind of grow up and that's how you learn. And there's, you know, if you do a trade, you're not very useful. And if you do this, it's not very useful. You won't make any money. But most of my friends now who have been in trades make all the money.
I have this conversation regularly with people. Like, I totally get it. It was, was similar when I think I'm a bit older than you, it was similar, you know, when grew up. It was, you do your GCSEs, you do your A-levels, you go to university.
They give you a UCAS form, you fill that out, and then that's it, nothing else, you know.
And I didn't go to university, I did my A-levels, and then I was just kind of sick of learning and didn't go to university myself. But most people I know did, you know, because that was what you did. Mm. Or if you went and did hairdressing, or you went and did, there was kind of, it was much more limited, I think, in lots of ways.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think also there was more of a stigma about going into doing something that was university. You almost looked at kind of being stupid in a way.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Which isn't nice, especially at that young age, you know, it's quite a lot of pressure to take on, but school just wasn't for me. So that's when I was kind of lazing about for a bit, for maybe 6 months to a year, getting up to no good. And then that's when I just applied for so many different apprenticeships, from cooking to engineering, honestly.
Wow, okay.
All sorts of stuff.
Because it was all like hands-on, so you definitely knew that you wanted to do like hands-on.
Learn on the job. I wanted to learn on the job. I think from a young age, I kind of knew that I was going to progress further by actually doing the job rather than writing about it.
Yeah.
So that's when I started to, like I said, apply for all these different apprenticeships. And that's when I got one back from, it was called The Vault. But it's now 2648.
Oh, I know, yeah.
Yeah, so that was a very, very long time ago. It's really about 13 years ago now, 12, 13 years ago. And I got offered an apprenticeship there. I think I was on £3.80 an hour.
Wow.
But, you know, I knew it was for the course. I'd go to college, get my MBQ and stuff.
And
that
was in the kitchen?
In the kitchen, yeah. So I was in the kitchen. The whole deal then, when I first started, was that I kind of done half pot wash and half kitchen and gradually went into it. But I remember the first job I ever done was I was prepping ribs. So real, real simple job, is, you know, prepping the ribs, marinating them, and then slow cooking them. But when I first had those ribs in my hand and I was cutting them, I just felt in complete control. I always remember that feeling.
Is it like, you know,
this is me. Like, I just remember going down that first, second, third rib and just being like, just in complete control. I felt at home, and it was such a nice feeling.
That's so cool. I love that.
Yeah, I would never have gone into chefing if I didn't get, who knows, I probably still would have, because I kind of felt that was the way that the world was, where it was putting me.
Yeah.
But it was ever something that I thought of, or kind of, you know, I'll give it a go. I need to be doing something.
Yeah.
I'm always quite proactive, so don't like not doing anything, right? Yeah, that was my first job. And then I remember having those ribs that I prepped and slow cooked for dinner that evening. And it was just...
And they were delicious.
Oh, so you were like, and I made this. Yeah, I made this. It's something, like I said, what my eating habits were like before.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, it was almost the equivalent to me of making a 3-star meal. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just couldn't believe it. It was amazing. And to think that, especially at that time when I didn't know a lot about ingredients and whatnot, to think, how did I make this from all these raw ingredients? And now I've just got this thick sauce that's coating all these ribs.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, I think we put Coca-Cola in there as well, I remember. And it blew my mind. I was like, what, you're cooking with Coca-Cola? So, it was incredible.
So you were there for how... So you kind of did your apprenticeship there?
Yeah, so I started to do my apprenticeship there. And then I think a year after that, I got a text from a very good friend of mine who was working at a hotel called Bedford Lodge.
Oh, yeah, in Newmarket.
In Newmarket, yeah. And he'd been a chef for about 5 years by then, and also had worked under Mark at Alimentum. And when it was 3 Rosettes, so that's how long ago we're talking now.
Yeah.
So he was quite serious into it. And he'd actually messaged me saying, look, if you actually want to cook seriously, you want to come down to Bedford Lodge.
And you're like,
yeah, well, but you know, he had a point, kind of, it is another level out there. So that was a 2 Rosette restaurant at the time. And yeah, that's when I went there and finished off my MBQ level 2 there. And that was a nice place, again, loads of fresh ingredients, more on the fine dining side of things, which... That then kind of set me in and said, no, this is what I want to be doing.
So it levelled you up. It was just like the next level.
Yeah, levelled me up.
And exposed you to, again, another type of cooking,
absolutely,
more ingredients.
Absolutely. And you know, at the time, there's a lot of, you know, you go from a kitchen where there was maybe 3 or 4 chefs. I was kind of the star of the show, being young, bubbly, not too bad, you know, learn things quite quickly. You go into a kitchen with about 12 chefs in there, you know, all hungry lads, all wanting to get. And I mean, I love competition, but at that time, when I was a lot younger, it was quite intimidating.
I mean, I imagine so.
Yeah.
I would always think there's no way that I'd be able to go into work in a kitchen environment. I think I'd find it just far too intimidating. But like you said, I think it takes a certain type. You have that drive, head down, you know, push kind of. And I think a lot of people And that's what a lot of chefs, successful chefs, that's what they are. It's about focus and going in, eyes on the prize, and then just, yeah, kind of getting it done, so to speak. And having, I think the drive is the main thing, and I think, like, Leo's very much like that. It's just push, push, push. And it can be food, it can be work, it can be in all aspects of life, just having that mentality of of just, you know, let's go, let's have
it. And that's it. And, you know, I'm a big believer in kind of, you know, the more sort of the difficult situations that you put you in, the reward's always higher. So for me, you know, at first, my first 2 months there, I had some bad services, do you know what I mean? And kind of get to the point where some chefs were like, is he going to quite cut it here, do you know what I mean? But keep going, kept plodding along, and, you know, within 3 to 4 months, I was quite a confident chef there, and just for my own sort of self-worth, made me feel really good, you know? To know that at one point, you know, you're not doing too well, and then suddenly you come past those barriers and you do better, and then it's like, right, what's next? You know, let's challenge again. But as I said, my friend Ricky, who was there, he was very, it was very inspirational for me, because he is a fantastic chef, awesome pastry chef as well. So to kind of be around that sort of environment and those chefs was done very well, good for my career, for sure.
So you learnt a lot. Would you say you learnt, that was kind of a big learning curve for you when you were at Bedford Lodge?
It was a huge learning curve, for sure. And in terms of the way the kitchen was structured, you know, in those big hotel kitchens, you know, you've got your fish section, you've got your larder section, you've got your sauce section and all that sort of thing, you know, sometimes two in each section. And I like that professionality in those sort of kitchens and the structure. You know, I think a lot of kitchens do miss that. Sometimes because they're so small, you can't have that, but they're the kitchens that I prefer to work in as a chef, you know, where there is a lot of structure, you know what you're doing on the day, you get in there, you've got your list, you've got your ingredients, go for it. That's it.
So from where did you go from Bedford Lodge?
So from Bedford Lodge, I went to the Tickle Arms.
Out in Whittlesford.
So I left Bedford Lodge because it kind of gets to that point, which I'm sure you know happens in a lot of places. Teams tend to leave kind of together, don't they? Whether they go in different places or whatnot. Almost sort of a domino effect. So, you know,
some people take people, you know, if you've got the suit, the head
That is X. So my friend, as I said, Ricky, he was leaving. And he
so
was,
is Ricky the City Boys?
No. That's another friend. Okay. So Ricky's still working as a chef out in, outside Bury at the moment somewhere. So he was leaving and a few other boys were leaving, and I tend to not really want to work places for longer than 1 to 2 years because I kept wanting to adapt, change and not get too comfortable, right? So that's when I left and went to the Tickle Arms, which was my first pub experience, which was different. It was busy, but it's also kind of learnt me a different aspect of hospitality as well, which is good. I think it's good to be quite adaptable, and know, at a point now I can kind of work in any sort of aspect of a kitchen, which is handy.
Absolutely. And, you know, even going back to your childhood, you were immersed in that environment when you were so small, so you've literally been through, you know, hotel cooking, pub cooking, restaurant cooking. Like, it just builds experience, and I think it is really important. Then by going into these different areas, and when you move, you are just more adaptable. You can slot in and kind of figure things out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Especially in, like, you know, the positions that I'm in now, where I'm freelancing, it's doing me wonders, you know. It's all that work 13 years ago is now kind of finally paying off in a way. So then Woodsford, I was there for about a year. That was with the company Cam's Cuisine, you know, a really nice bunch of people. The owners were really good. Really good team there. So I learned quite a bit there. It was more kind of learning that environment, where it's going from a kitchen, as I say, where you've got 12 chefs and you're in your section, to a kitchen where you're running side to side and you're not really too sure what you're doing most of the time, but you're just cooking, you know?
But you're doing it.
You're just doing it, And, you know, it gets to 10:30 and you think, I've got no idea.
how that just happened.
But it happened, right? And you're cleaning down and you think, you know, all right, tomorrow's another day. So I was there for a bit, and then I briefly went to a hotel in Ely called Poets House, which is where my friend Ricky, who I was working at Bedford Lodge, was. Went there for 4 or 5 months. It kind of turned out to be a bit of a shit show, and again everyone started to move on. That's when Ricky had said to me, "It's like, why don't you go and work with Mark at Elementum?" He was like, "Just do it. You know, if you're going to be running around for 60 hours a week, go and run around in the one star and learn something." You know. So it's all right. So he had messaged Mark for me. I then called Mark myself and said, "Can we arrange a trial shift or whatnot?" He's like, "Yeah, no problem." Really nice on the phone. I thought, all right, this might not be too bad then. went there the next week, and then started the week after in the transition period, which was real quick like that. You know, it's like one second I'm in quite a laid back hotel where it was pretty chilled out there, wasn't too bad, and 2 weeks later you're in a one star, was a demi chef to party, being told that forget everything you've learned, it was all wrong. You're starting from scratch now, basically.
Wow, is that what Mark said?
Yeah. Essentially, yeah, because I was also doing my level 3 at the time, and they were kind of like, we don't take on apprentices here. You can either do your course elsewhere, or you can come here and learn. And yeah, I was quite savvy. I've always been quite savvy. I thought, this is going to be better for my career. You know, yeah. I've done my level 2. I want to learn how to cook now. And I want to learn how to cook good food, you know. So it was just a case of, you know, forget what you know. Which was quite hard for me at the time, because in those years of where I had been, I had progressed quite a lot. So I think when I was at the Tickle Arms, I progressed up to the junior sous position. So I was quite young, 21, 22, junior sous. Yeah. Quite cocky as well, you know, you feel good. And you think you know a lot more than you do because you're in that position, right? So then you go down to a demi chef de party, you take near enough, you know, a 10k pay cut, and you're being told that you know fuck all, do you know what I mean? so yeah, you just kind of started again, and it was hard, but it was hard, but I wasn't in a position where I needed to know anything because of the position that I was in, you know.
Yes.
It was expected not to know anything.
Yeah. So if you did, it was a bonus, basically.
Yeah, but even then, I don't think he would have cared too much, to be honest with you. Mm. It was kind of, this is how we're cooking here. And they are like that. And as I've grown into different fine dining kitchens, everyone's got a different technique for everything. Mm. It's just about learning how to do it, how that head chef wants it, and that's simple, you know.
So would you say Mark was a bit of a mentor at that time for you?
He definitely was, yeah. I mean, I was quite lucky at the time because, you know, Mark's a very busy man, but at that time, Mark was cooking a lot in that kitchen, you know, 5-6 days a week. I was on the garnish, I started off, and he was on the sauce. So just to be around and see the way...
Well, it's a great learning environment for someone coming in, like I said.
He was just so relaxed, you know. Sometimes, you know, have whole fish and stuff like that, and you're so relaxed. There's no halibut prepped in the fridge. You just pull one out, prep it, little portion, on the grill. Done. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Mm. It was a nice way to see... to be by someone who was just such a natural cook,
yeah,
you know, and so, you know, it cooks in a beautiful way, you know, as you know, and most people do. So he was a massive mentor for me in teaching me kind of what I needed to know, what good food should look and taste like,
yeah,
and how you need to put that time and effort into your mise en place and stuff like that to produce, you know, because, you know, you have some long days there, but it had to be done. Mm. So, yeah, huge mentor for me. Probably didn't get on too well in the first 3 months because I wasn't that good, and he gave me quite a hard time. There's a few days, you know, you'd be outside the front in the morning smoking cigarette after cigarette, being like, fuck this, man, just jump on the agency. Fuck it, we'll get paid more, probably get the weekends off, you know, and live a happier lifestyle. But, you know, I think in the back of my mind, subconsciously, there's always something saying, this is, you know, if my career wouldn't have been the same if I didn't work for Mark for however long I did.
Yeah.
So I was only there for about just over a year. But after 3 months, I think after I showed him that I was dedicated and I did want to learn, I might not know it yet, but I will do at some point. He started to kind of take me in a bit more. And he taught me some awesome stuff. Yeah.
But it's interesting because we were talking before we recorded that you'd listened to Mark's episode.
Yes.
And he kind of talks similarly about when he was a young chef, that he worked somewhere and he wasn't getting promoted until the chef that he was working for, like he's kind of maybe a mentor at the time, was, you know, gave him a bit of a hard time till he thought, right, no, you're ready.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, you can see that he's, you know, not kind of done the same thing really, like, you know, nurtured someone in a way till he thinks they're ready, and then once he thinks, right, yeah, that's it, we're good.
Let's go for it. Absolutely. And I always find this, I mean, you know, these kitchens are hard places to work in, and you do, there's a level of discipline that you need to know, and it, they can be hard. You find that, especially someone like Mark, he wouldn't give you shit unless he knew you could progress.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we had some donkeys that worked in there. They used to get no shit at all sometimes. But he just knew it was a waste of energy. But at the time, he's sitting there thinking, if I had done that...
Yeah, I'd get it.
Get it in 2 days straight. Do you know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't forget about that. But as you go, you kind of learn that that's why he was doing it.
They can see
that, there's something in you, you know. Yeah. You've got something in you. You know, when I think like 6 months in, he just pulled me out of the kitchen during the service, just at the end of the service, saying, I need to have a word with you. Sat down and he said, what do you think we're going to talk about? And I said, I'm guessing you're probably going to call me every name under the sun. And he started laughing. He said, no, I want to promote you. And that was probably one of the biggest achievements of my life at the time, to be promoted to a chef de party at a Michelin star restaurant. You know, that was
it's big.
At that time, like I say, it was very big for me, and I was chuffed, absolutely chuffed. Yeah, so it was there, and after that, he really looked after me, and he still does now. You know, still got quite a close relationship with the business now that I've got, which obviously we'll go on to. Invited me down, I think, you know, a few weeks after opening it at the Shepherd's, and said, "Look, mate, you can do a pop up here. I don't want any money. Just want to see you do well."
He did that with us.
Yeah.
In lockdown, he was like, "Bring the van. We're not open. Just use our car park."
Yeah, amazing,
so
right?
So we just had the Steak and Lawn van at the Shepherd's car park. I don't know how many times, 2 or 3 times maybe.
Amazing.
And it's
especially
just,
at that time as well.
Yeah, exactly. Just use it. We're not open. It's fine.
Yeah.
We're like, give you a burger. He's like, cool. Happy to do it. I love that. It's I think he's a very generous guy.
Absolutely.
Very,
yeah, definitely one of my main mentors throughout my career, for sure.
So bring it back to now. Oyster Lab. This is your current business.
Mm-hmm.
So this was set up in lockdown, just after lockdown?
It was just after lockdown. So I think the lockdown for me done wonders, because I had 6 months off without any responsibilities and I was getting paid.
So you were on furlough?
I was on furlough.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just, I kind of done the lockdown the right way. I didn't drink for it at all. I was exercising a lot and just had
so
that.
So like you felt mentally, physically
the best
really
I
good.
Ever have, yeah.
It's so interesting. I felt similar in a way. I started, I mean, I don't really run, but I started running again, and I felt really quite, I got a lot of clarity
in that first
lockdown, around like the May, kind of April, May, June, that one, which was really bizarre in a way, because, and it was really, really hard for so many people, but there was this, and actually, once lockdown finished, it kind of, I felt that sliding definitely back to, you know, before, but there was this period where I think there was definitely like a lot more clarity and, lightness mentally, definitely.
Yeah, I think especially working in that industry for so long, you don't get a chance to think sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, if you're doing 70 to 80 hours a week, it's tough, you know. Even just taking a week off, it's not a long enough time, you know.
Do you always get ill when you have a week off?
No.
Because I find whenever Leo used to have time off, he would he'd be ill. So he'd be ill for like 2-3 days, and then he'd have 2 days and he'd like be back to work again.
Yeah.
And it would be every single time.
Yeah.
It's not so bad now, but I get it's that kind of like, you just that high energy all the time, working all the hours and then crashing.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah. So I didn't start it during the lockdown. I had all that kind of time to myself. I was working at Trinity Restaurant as a sous chef at the time. And I had oysters in my mind before the lockdown to do something. I thought it was a cool idea, because I worked in London for a couple of years. It was actually the first ever time I tried an oyster. It was only about 5 years ago. But I was just quite obsessive with things sometimes. So I tried it and I was like, fucking love these. And then that was me eating 20, 30 a day. Where's your oyster gone? I ain't got no idea, chef. You know what I mean? But you know me. So it was in the back of my mind. And then when I was at Trinity and we came back, they asked me to write the oyster menu there. So I, rather than the kind of standard classically whatever they were before, I went completely kind of off the grid a bit and tried some really cool different flavours. So we done like a baked one, and white one velouté, and also put a southern fried one on as well.
Oh.
So they were very different, and they're not something that I find you can get anywhere in Cambridge,
no.
Right? So I'd put them on, and the customers, the owner were like, these are amazing. I love the way that the kind of they've been done so differently. That's when it clicked. I was like, I'm going to need to make a business out of this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people are absolutely fucking loving it.
Yeah.
So I was like, right, making a business out of it. And because I'd had that downtime for so long, I was in this mode at the time where if I said something, it was done. Like, there wasn't any thinking, I said I'm going to do it now, so I need to do it. And quite luckily, that still carried on now.
I love that. It's great. Positive, let's do it.
It was almost kind of like, it was, why can't I do it? Like, I've got the idea, I've mapped it out, if I do all of these steps now, it's done. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the thing is, I think at that time, the worst thing sometimes you can do is talk to too many people about what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because other people, if they don't match your energy, they can put you off a little
bit. Yeah, of course.
Bit, right?
And you think, oh, I was good. And yeah, maybe you're right, actually.
Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
you're right. No, yeah. You know what? It's not going to work. And I'm not going to do it.
Yeah,
but you're right. Just
Everyone always Focus. Said to me, yeah. you can't just do oysters, Henry, it's not going to work. You can't just do oysters. Every person I spoke to near enough was like, you can't just do oysters. But I think being a bit stubborn kind of helped, because that made me more want to show people, yeah. Oh, watch this, do you know what I mean? I can just do oysters.
So
that's when I started it in, kind of just started it by doing socials. It wasn't so much a business, more just a page for people to see what the interest was, mm-hmm. where the demographic was out there, which I was confident that it was. And then in October, I done my first oyster and sparkling wine tasting at the Senate.
So is that last, so a year?
Like a year ago.
So a year ago? Yeah,
so the first event I done falls on my 30th birthday this year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, pretty cool, yeah. So that was, yeah, coming up to a year. And the idea was quite innovative. I thought, it's not really anything like this out there.
There wasn't, though. There
Nothing.
Wasn't.
No, not at all. Especially at that time. And the kind of the niche, and one of the niches behind the Oyster Lab was we flavour our oysters in wicked and wonderful ways. You know, there's mm-hmm. a flavour pairing you'll get here that you won't find in the world, mm-hmm. probably. It's quite special to me to know it's a one-off like that. So
I love that wicked and wonderful ways. Yeah. That's cool, I really like
that. Yeah, that's it. So I think having those flavours is what gave me the scope to then pair all sorts of nice wines, sparkling wines, mm-hmm. still wines to that. And again, it was like, all right, well, I spoke to the people at the Senate, they're very accommodating, and said, yeah, let's do one here. And it was kind of like, again, is this going to work? Because it's not really been done, especially in Cambridge, it's not been done before. Mm-hmm. Are people going to look at it and say, what? Well, it's just one of those things which was like, you only can find out one way.
Yeah, do it.
You know, that's it. I had about 500 followers on Instagram at the time. Luckily, a lot of the demographic within that were in Cambridge. Mm-hmm. So I just thought, fuck it, let's put some tickets out there, let's see what's going on.
Yeah.
And We sold out within about 2 weeks, which was really nice. And then, you know, you're going into this first event, no idea what you're doing. No, you've got your voice, you've got your dressings, mm. and that's about it. And you're mm. a bit savvy, but you just, you know, the momentum and the attitude, you just let that carry you through. And it was fantastic. We had a really good night there. So we done four there, and then went into another lockdown, unfortunately. Yeah. Which again gave me some scope to plan some more events. And then a very good friend of mine, Will, who owns Enchanted Cinema.
Okay,
He has really good, because he had his cinema at the Gonville Hotel.
Yeah.
He's really into his music as well. So he was like, let's do a live music and oyster tasting in December. I was like, fuck it, let's do it, you know. So we got some popcorn musicians in, done another event then. And I think because of the period of time that people had over that past year, live music was almost like watching a TV for the first time. You know what I mean? People were there like, what's going on? Like, is this even allowed? It's like, no, don't worry, it's cool. So we've done that, and that was just such an awesome night. So that was, the events are kind of the bread and butter of the Oyster Lab, because they are the most, it gives me a chance to be creative. It's a blank canvas, so we can kind of collaborate with all sorts of things, you know. It opens your mind to kind of think how many different places you can bring oysters to.
Yeah, anywhere.
Why not?
Yeah.
Just sit down, you've got oysters in front of you, watch what you like, you know. So.
Is there a lot of cooking involved?
So there's cooking involved in all the different dressings we do, and then there's cooking involved with the cooked oysters. But in terms of the actual service, It's pretty straightforward.
So you can, that's why it works, I guess, where you can actually take this out of somewhere and put it somewhere else,
All the work's in the mise en place, you know.
Yeah.
Which again, kind of was from my background of cooking,
yeah.
showed me that as long as your mise en place is set and you are ready, your service is the easiest part of your night.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you're ready, your mindset's, you know, you're unbreakable. So that's with the oysters, it's all prepped, good to go, and yeah, the services are really nice.
Where do you get your oysters from?
So we started off by using Mersey Rock oysters,
uh-huh.
Which are really nice. They're quite big, and they're quite sweet in taste as well, which is fantastic, especially pairing them with different flavours.
Yeah.
Gives it a different element, right? But during the summertime, they start to go really milky. Almost to a point where they're completely inedible and they're not nice.
Yeah.
Now we're starting to use molten rock oysters now.
Okay.
Which are a bit more consistent in size, and they don't take on that creaminess as much, just I think because the sea's bigger from where they harvest, basically. Yeah.
Amazing. How do you like to eat your oysters? What's your favourite way to eat an
oyster? So, I mean, I always say this when I do my different pop-ups, because we're like Cafe Foy and stuff, kind of, we're signing there to turn them into a part-time oyster bar while they're doing their drinks and stuff as well, which is pretty cool over the summer. The classic way, with a bit of Tabasco, a bit of lemon juice and pickled schnapps, it's the OG really, isn't it?
You know,
we're not trying to reinvent the wheel, just kind of trying to create a new one to go beside it, right? So that one's always a favourite for me, but then a new flavour I've been putting on recently is a Gremolata oyster. So just garlic, parsley and lemon.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah. All raw ingredients, obviously. Yeah. And that pairs with the oyster really well. Because obviously they're quite salty and they're quite refreshing. So you need all those fresh ingredients to kind of match up to your oyster.
Yeah, it sounds gorgeous.
I can literally go through...
Dozens
of them, yeah, which is bad sometimes because obviously you're eating, you don't want to get high in your own supply, right?
But it's good.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, no, they're really, really nice, and they're probably my favourite flavour, yeah, for sure.
So, what are your plans for the future with Oyster Lab? Is it just going to be more pop ups? Would you like to get your own kind of like more like place, restaurant?
Yeah, I think so. What we're starting to do now in the winter is I'm a chef by trade and I've worked at some nice places and I know how to cook, right? So I think I'm going to start implementing more seafood tastings into it, which involve oysters, but then a few more kind of dishes that go along with it, because you know, there is skill there that needs to be used, and I love cooking for people. I love putting smiles on people's faces, you know. So that's one thing that we'll start to be doing more of. We've already done a couple of tastings like that. Going into the winter, it's going to be more events, more pop-ups. But then we're building a mobile bar at the moment.
Okay, great.
So, which we can just push along. And we'll be looking to kind of market more towards weddings, private events, Christmas do's, that sort of thing, where we can just take it along. And if you need oysters, we're there for you, basically.
Let's have just like ice, just oysters opened.
Yeah, that's it. And people can just come. Flavours, you know, we'll have three to five different flavours on. What do you want?
Wonderful.
Sharp flavour, see you later.
Wonderful.
If we can get in some of the nice festivals, maybe some of the race courses, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
That's the idea. So,
perfect.
Yeah.
And we briefly spoke before we started recording about Black Velvet Hospitality.
Yes. So that's something I set up very recently. End of September, I set that up. As I say, as we go into the winter time, the Oyster Lab isn't as busy. So, and I'm sure, as you know, as you're always thinking as well, right?
Yeah, it's
literally what I live and breathe on.
Yeah.
You know, because the thing is with me sometimes, if I'm not doing anything for 2 days, I felt like I haven't done anything for like months.
Yeah.
I literally feel like, I'm quite hard on myself, right? So I kind of feel like you're being useless now. You need to do something. So these things kind of keep me fueled up.
Yeah.
There's a massive gap in the market, as you know, for chefs at the moment.
Yeah.
And then an even bigger gap for good ones, right?
Yeah.
So I kind of wanted to fill that, give people kind of a service where, so as you know as well, agency chefs can be completely through the roof and you don't get for what you pay for half the time.
Sure.
So give people a product where it's affordable and you're getting something which is worth its money, right? That's what Black Velvet Hospitality is at the moment. It's just freelancing and also just going to a bit of private chefing as well, cooking in people's houses. Private dinner parties, that sort of thing. I think because I've got a good relationship with a lot of venues, it helps me to source things for people's private dinner parties, birthdays, that sort of things, and then cook for them there. And then within 6 to 12 months, it's turned that into a kind of elite chef agency, where we bring a few more people on board, and you know, the right people, and then hopefully kind of help to fill that gap, which there is in the hospitality and kitchens at the moment.
Yeah, it's well needed.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And like we were saying, again, previously, you know, your experience is only going to mean that you're the best person to help these people get jobs as well, and
to get
the right people into the right roles.
And that's it, exactly that. And not send, like, and then on, you know, adverse to that, not sending the wrong person to the wrong place because it's pointless, right? And makes you look like a bit of a fucking idiot, right? Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a reputation that you have to hold up out there, you know?
Yeah. It's exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited.
So many plates. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, that's it. I think the thing is, you take this work on and then you look and you think, how the fuck am I going to do it? But it always gets done,
yeah. Right? That's the thing.
That's it. You never, like, it never, I always say that as well, especially working in kitchens, again, it's taught me that, is you go into a service and you do think sometimes, I don't know if I'm going to make it. You know, you've had all these walk-ins come in, or the bookings are all too close together, and you think, but you always make it. Always sitting there cleaning down with a beer in your hand at 10:30 thinking, wicked.
There you go.
That's it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You just got to be confident. You've got to know your ability and go for it.
And just go for it. That's it. Don't blink.
Yeah. I love that. Don't blink.
Don't blink.
So we're going to wrap things up now
okay.
with the last question, which is what we're all here for, which is about burgers.
Mm-hmm.
So, what was the best burger? Do you like burgers for a start?
Fucking love burgers.
We're on the right track then. Brilliant. Yeah, you like burgers. What's the best burger you've ever had? Where was it? What was in it? Go.
Okay, so there's the couple for me. One's attached more to a memory and one's more...
I love it.
Yeah. So the first one I'll say is, you know, I want to support the locals that are in Cambridge. My favourite burger I'd say that I've had in Cambridge would be Butch Annie's.
Mm-hmm.
I went there, I've been there when they first opened up, and it was a pretty, it was a nice burger. I went there just after the first lockdown.
Yeah.
And it was a nice, it was a simple burger, Montgomery cheddar, red onion marmalade, a brioche bun, and it's a nice medium burger. And it was fucking unreal. It was
just, simple.
And I wasn't expecting it because I was expecting what I'd eaten before there, which was nice, which is why I went there. But they absolutely nailed it there. Yeah, really, really, really well done. The burger was rested perfectly. There was juices flowing everywhere.
Yeah.
Red onion marmalade on a burger for me is just an absolute winner.
Yeah. Red onion marmalade in general.
Just red onion marmalade.
I had it with some cheese the other day. I'm just like anything. Like I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. And the second one was in Dublin. It was a chicken burger, and me and four of my friends had been out on an absolute bender in Dublin, and we were booked in to a Michelin star restaurant at 7 o'clock. At 5 o'clock, we were
not hanging,
we've been drinking since 11.
Oh my god,
so
okay, wow.
Yeah. So we're about 12 pints of Guinness in. and we're all just sitting there like waving around with this chicken burger in our hand. I can't remember what the place was called. I knew it was a chicken burger. It was thigh that was fried, which is always perfect for a chicken burger. And yeah, I remember just looking around the table thinking, we cannot go and eat in this Michelin star restaurant tonight. So that was our last meal of, I think on the weekend there, especially.
So you didn't go to the
We couldn't turn up like that. Called him up from the burger place. I think by my voice, you're like, oh, yeah, fair enough.
It's fine, put the phone down.
You feel a bit bad about it, so you don't want to let the company down and whatnot, but I mean, I think it would have been worse if we turned up, right?
I love, but that chicken burger was like the right place, right time,
everyone,
just what you needed.
Yeah, and I just remember, like, normally when you're drunk, it's just to fill a hole. I always remember thinking, this is fucking amazing, but I'm never going to remember where or what this place is if I want to come back. So, yeah.
It is interesting that we've had a few people that, what I've said, like, what's your favourite burger? Chicken burgers have been quite common.
Yeah?
That people have, like,
I do like a chicken burger as long as they use thigh meat. I think breast meat can just, unless it's literally cooked and eaten straight away, it can. I'm not a big fan of chicken breast in general. I like meat that's on the bone.
Yeah.
First time I had thigh meat was a place called Bird on Camden High Street.
Yeah.
And they do very good burgers in there as well. And that's like, this is how you do chicken burgers.
Nice. Mm. Thanks so much for coming
on. Thank you so much for having me.
It's been great. It's been so interesting talking to you. Mm-hmm. So thanks for listening, guys. And we'll catch you with the next episode.
You can follow Oyster Lab on Instagram at Oyster Lab Cambridge and also at Black Velvet Hospitality for Henry's new venture. Join us for the penultimate episode next time.